Welcome to the Deli Pod with me, James Deli Pod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but look who I've got. It's none other than Carl Vernon. Carl, you are a comedian, a motivational speaker, a best-selling author. You're an expert on anxiety. You've got the perfect skill set to cheer me up and rescue me from the terminal despair I'm in right now.
Well, should we have a go, shall we? You've been poisoned, and from what I gather so far, James, you've told me you're on the fifth booster.
The fifth booster, yeah. They're safe and effective, right? Because they wouldn't tell you that if it wasn't.
Just ask Fauci, James. Just ask Fauci. Safe and effective. Hang on, let me go check my bank balance. Yeah, super safe and effective. You're going for a bit of a rough one, aren't you? You're going for mercury poisoning. I've heard about people getting mercury poisoning from eating fish.
I tell you what, I'll tell you what. I think that so many of the side effects of the death jab, as I should be careful not to call it on a podcast, because otherwise I might get censored. People who are taking the death jab are just joining the long list of people who have been poisoned by an industry which wants to poison us. I mean, you know, we're talking about the food industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the dental industry. I mean, that's where my problems, you know, from amalgam fillings. You know, whoever thought up the crazy idea that what we put in people's mouths, in their teeth, I know, something made with about the most toxic metal known to man, that'll work. I mean, what kind of, anyway,
crazy idea.
I don't want to become a bore,
they're not profiting from health, and you know that's not, you know, that's not rocket science, is it? That a nation of healthy people is not a nation of people that provides an insane amount of profit. And I think summed up perfectly in regards to that as an example was the lockdowns. You know, when it came, I even hate these terms. I hate these terms that they just got us used to. Lockdowns. Lockdown, the term for freaking prisoners, James. Yeah, let's clarify this. You know, when we're saying things like lockdowns, it's not normal. But what gives the greatest example of that in regards to lockdowns is gym shut. Yeah, can't go into the gym. What, the very thing that actually is going to help me and keep me healthy and, you know, intrinsically, mentally and physical bodies, they go together and one don't go without the other. Going to the gym, going to make you feel good. No, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But you can go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
You go, that's still open 24/7, that one, Jay. Pop down. Still order the food from the apps. Yeah, you still do all those things, just can't go to the gym, can't go to the park because the park's chained up too. Yeah, nation of healthy people mentally and physically certainly doesn't provide eye-watering profits, James. That's for sure.
We've got so much stuff that we can talk about. But before we go there, I want you to tell me a bit more about how you got to be Carl Vernon, and also when it was that you realised that things are not as they were sold to us. Have you ever had a proper job? Have you always been a kind of, you know, self-starter?
I love that. You ever had a proper job? You lay about.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I ran my own business for a very long time in quite randomly the recruitment sector, you know, throughout
lucrative
my 20s.
I hear.
Well, it was all right at the time. Again, before the psychos and the banksters came along, and that was one of the first industries that was shut down because it just generally is. Recruitment tends to go when recessions come. And, you know, from the age of 21, I set up my own business. Let's get to the interesting bit. You know, I did that for about 8 or 9 years. Went to Shiza throughout all of that journey as well, where some of the books have come from, particularly the ones focused more on anxiety. Had a personal journey with a lot of that type of stuff. The worst point of that was not being able to leave my home and going through some really bad phases of that. And it's actually, I find it less shocking now, but I tend to find throughout these years, there's a strange connection between people who have experienced things like anxiety, experienced things like high stress, and also are able to use things like critical thinking, critical thought. I tend to find a lot of the people that I've been meeting on our side, if you want to call it that, James, typically are the ones that are a bit more in touch, a bit more in touch with their environment, a bit more in touch with what's going on, and are able, because of that and the downsides of that, of things like anxiety and stress, and experience them a little bit more than the average, but they're able to tap into the critical thinking side of things, which, let's face it, is severely lacking. But bring us, you know, the speed up, less boring bit. Really, the reason I'm sitting here speaking to you as I am right now is just because the last couple of years, you know, there I was coaching after, you know, recruitment went tits up and I had all my experiences with anxiety, found my own answers, went out, didn't find much help with the medical industry and counselors and things like that, found my own answers, and then started coaching people, helping people with anxiety and stress with the answers that I found. And through that journey, it brings me here today. There I was helping people with anxiety and stress, and then all of a sudden, people started collapsing in the street in China. Yeah, just dropping down there, James. Just bang, bang, bang. Like, you know, what's going on here? Never saw it myself. Never saw it in this country. Never saw it quite as bad as the pictures that first came out in China. And then this chap called Neil Ferguson came out. When it all kicked off with these quite astonishing predictions. You know, he'd done things like on foot and mouth predictions and things like
very successful.
Everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
Very, you know, incredible guy. You know, if you ever wanted a guy statistically to be wrong about pretty much everything, there's your dude. You want to employ somebody that's guaranteed to get something wrong. There he is. Right. So he comes along. And he goes on our screens and he's saying, this thing's coming along and basically you're dead. Everybody, you know, enjoy the next 5 minutes because you ain't
half
got
a million
long
dead.
Left. Enjoy, because statistically, right, you're fecked, okay? So this dude comes along and I'm like, very, very early on, I'm thinking, okie doke, well, look, let's just take a step back a minute. All right, let's, you know, because sometimes the media don't always tell the truth. You know, sometimes the media ain't always what it's cracked up to be. So let's take a step back. Let's ask a few questions. Is this really what this is all about? Because what we've got here is a guy who's coming out with all these predictions. Everyone's going to die. And maybe, based on his previous predictions, we should maybe be questioning some of this, along with some of the propaganda that's going on, like with pictures of people dropping down dead in the streets that I'm not seeing myself. So it took a step back. And that's what really spurred it on, really, in regards to the videos. I decided just to sit in front of the camera and do a video a little bit more sort of, you know, on the anxiety stress side as well, because that's where I was at the time. Like, you know, maybe we should be taking a step back here. Maybe we should be looking at this. Maybe we should be asking questions. And I decided to do a video off the back of Neil Ferguson. Then it progressed from there. And then naturally, as Clown Planet evolved, as I then started to see these waves of, as I call them, nap-naps, people triple masking up, you know, as I'm... sit down in a restaurant and the rules come out. Hang on a minute. You know, you're all right when you're sitting down. But when you stand up, when you're walking into the restaurant, when you stand up to go to the toilet, you must put your mask back on. And this Clown Planet type stuff just kept evolving. I never put on a mask, never going to do it. Because, again, I know you understand this, James. For me, it's very much a sign of, are you a member of the cult? It's a tool of compliance. It's a visual tool of fear. I'm not doing that. I know fear from my days of being terrorized. I know fear. I made a promise to myself. Maybe, again, this is part of the reason why I'm sitting in front of you. I made a promise to myself that, you know what, go fuck yourself with all this type of stuff. You know, I will question things. The mask is a tool of fear. People are buying into this. People are going crazy with it. People aren't questioning why it's okay to sit down and not stand. Why it's okay to sit down, right? But when you need to get up to go to the toilet, apparently that's when you need to put the mask on because it's incredibly unsafe. That is, of course, just one of many examples of Clown Planet. So then naturally the comedy started to come in because of all the things that I was seeing around me, James. It's been nothing short of insanity, and there's a level of concern that, you know, based on something the media has been able to stir up, based on something that has a higher average death age than the average death age, that it's concerning.
Yeah. No, you're right. That you would have thought, wouldn't you, that the last 2 years or so would have been an absolute gift for comedians. There was so much rich material. You could just, I mean, that's the job after all, isn't it? To afflict the comfortable, comfort the afflicted, just point out what are the absurdities of society and reveal them to an audience, and you get that comedy of recognition. I ain't seeing it from the house comedians at Radio 4. I'm not seeing it from any of them. Any of the, who of the names, the people who appear on Have I Got News For You? There's license, I mean, licensed by the establishment to make us laugh, allegedly. Where are they?
I'm still waiting for the likes of Ricky Gervais to come out, James, and you know, just even at the basic levels, you know, start laughing at things like the mask, start laughing at things like lockdown, start laughing at things like social distancing, start laughing at things like the test and why it has to be this fucking long.
Have you been following him? What is his position?
I like Ricky Gervais. He's incredibly, you know, he's one of the world's top comedians, and rightly so. He's an incredibly funny guy. But you would have expected, based on, you're exactly right, James, based on the gift that just keeps on giving. It's like Biden. It's like a day will not go by without literally going like that. Here's some comedy gold, sir. You know, here's your opportunity. Take it. And I suppose it brings up the question, why, doesn't it? Why have these top comedians, people like Ricky Gervais, why have they not joked about it? And for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it always comes back to follow the money in literally anything, right? Yeah. Whether it's keeping people unhealthy, whatever the situation may be, all roads lead back to follow the money. And I would imagine it's pretty much the same with the likes of Ricky Gervais and comedians. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. You know, cancel culture, whatever you want to call it. They're obviously, like doctors, just scared of losing their entire lives and professions.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that we've got some very obvious wrong-uns in the form of Fauci and the entire pharmaceutical industry. We've got the doctors who have been blithely giving out these experimental jabs to their patients. Oh, yeah, it's fine, it's safe and effective. And so you've got them. You've got the media, which has been absolutely disgusting. I mean, I'm so ashamed of my trade. But it goes even further, as you say. Like, comedians who really have one job, which is to make us laugh by mocking the things that deserve mockery, and they're not doing it. And my view is that pretty much everyone, apart from people like us who've found a way of negotiating our exit from the system, people are part of the beast system. The system is fundamentally evil. I don't know how far down the religion rabbit hole you are. I mean, I think that Christianity is the most interesting rabbit hole of all, because you start entering realms like good and evil, and the person who I think is ultimately responsible for the shit that's happening, which is the devil. But I don't know, what's your explanation? Well, who do you think is pulling the strings?
I think that's a question that can be as shallow or as profound as you want to go. And I think actually that's maybe why you frame the question the way that you do. How far down are you? Because the further down you go, the more profound you can get. And for me, it's an interesting question because I think it somewhere along the way, there has to be a form. There doesn't have to be. No, I mean, you can keep going. You can keep going down any hole you like. But for me, having been down holes previously, personally, and personally witnessed what it is that we might call this as our life, as our experience, there is a form of balance somewhere that if you are going to get any form of what you might define as happiness or joy or the things that balance out all of this crap, all of this evilness, all of this toxicity, all of these arseholes, all of these morons, if you're going to get anything out of this, then there has to be a form of balance. Why? Because that hole, you can keep digging and you can keep going. And it's as deep, arguably, as you want it to be. And you can keep finding answers and you keep finding answers. You keep finding more things. And you discover more things that depress you. You discover more things that can make you anxious. You discover more things that you just think to yourself, you know what? They're telling me to just go and live in a pod. I think I can do that. I think I'll just go and put my VR glasses on right now, go and live in some fantasy VR place in my pod and just call it a day. And of course, when you frame it like that, you've got to kind of think to yourself, well, if that's what they want, then they're kind of achieving that too. Why? Because they are pushing people into holes. They're pushing people into this shallow existence. Your original question, James, what is it that's causing this? If I draw it back a little bit, because I can do the profound thing. I can do the, you know, I'm not a religious person, but I do get faith. I get belief. I get the power of it because I understand, you know, the power of thoughts, the power of mind, the power of faith. And then, of course, you've always got the opposite side of that. Where there's the power of faith, you've got the things that will manipulate it. You've got the things that will use it as a tool. You've got the evil side of that too. You've got the control side. Something that is so powerful in regards to faith and belief can be manipulated. It can be controlled, which again is why I keep a personal distance with a lot of that stuff too, or try to. You can be as profound as you like about the cause of it, but if you strip it down to the basics, power, money, control, what is it that the profound bit maybe is, what is it that it wants to control? So on the more shallow end of it, you've got literally stripping people of their possessions, their money, their homes, their cars, their ability to travel. Then you've got the slightly more evil side, stripping them of their freedoms, their sovereignty. And then you've got the slightly more profound bit that you can go into, your soul. What it is that is your entire existence, your entire energy. You know what, we're connected to summit, James, right? It doesn't feel like it, but this is a grid system, if you like. It's energy. We are seeing a tiny amount of light in regards to the reality of what this place is, and we're connected to something, and we're connected to it via energy. So does it go as profound and deep as them feeding off our negative energy? Because sometimes it feels like that too, doesn't it? Like, you know,
I think it does.
I hope you enjoyed that 5 minutes. Well, I hope you enjoyed the 5 minutes between Rona and war. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed another 5 minutes before whatever comes next too, James. Because it does feel like sometimes, doesn't it? Like, particularly the media. The media is the, okay, you know all about this. The media is the epitome. It is the epicenter of the message. Be afraid. Be constantly afraid. You know, be cautious. Don't be happy. And it's constant. And throughout Rona, I mean, that was the big wake-up call for me. You know, it was, you know, daily death rates, daily testing, daily this. This is what you need to be terrified of. And it truly does get to a point with now things in regards to the war and stuff too. It gets to a point where you sort of think to yourself, hang on a minute, Are they literally feeding off my negative shit? Are they feeding off my negative energy? And if that's the case, how does that work? And then, of course, that creates another hole, perhaps.
Yeah, the demon shaped hole.
I think it's depending on how deep you want to go, isn't it?
Yeah. Tell me, before you know the Chinese people started dropping dead in the streets, and before the Neil Ferguson, before the lockdown craziness, did you have faith in the paradigm? Did you sort of basically believe? Isn't it great? We've sent a man to the moon several times, and isn't it great that we finally killed that man responsible for 9/11? You know, the one who lived in a cave, and we finally got him thanks to Obama sitting there with his. Were you invested in that system?
It was a mixture, James. It was a mixture. I mean, sitting here now, could we all go on a journey? And sitting here now, I was pretty naive. Never stupid. And I think it was more, not necessarily naivety. It was more like the average pleb in that I kind of didn't care. Right. So the Matrix was distracting me very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, I was a lot of the time crippled with anxiety. And what anxiety does is it turns your attention inwards. So rather than finding answers about people landing on the moon or buildings dropping down with planes and terrorists getting killed and celebrating all that type of stuff, rather than even questioning all of that, it's a combination of, well, do I really care about it? You know, I'm focused on how I'm feeling because that's how it gets you. And really, that's how the system wants people now too. You know, they want them focused so heavily on what they're thinking and feeling that you don't go outwards. So that was really taking effect for me, and it was working. And I had all these stresses of running the business, all stresses of going broke, all stresses, you know, the usual stuff that encapsulates you, the health, the money, the people surround you, your environment. And all of that was doing a great job at capturing me.
Yeah.
And I was never stupid. You know, there were certain things. But then there's this laziness as well that resides in all of us. And I don't mind admitting, you know, I'm less lazy now because you can't afford to be lazy nowadays. You'll just slip too much. But back then when, you know, I'm crippled with stress, when I've got all these different things going on, there's a laziness element, like whatever comes up on the TV, whatever comes up on the BBC News, whatever the headlines are, you tend to just be like, okay, yeah. And the laziness that resides in us all just means that we just go by that because it's just easier. Mm. It's easier not to question it. It's easier just to take what that person on the TV is saying and be like, yeah, because you see all these other people doing it too. All these other people are just following exactly the same narrative. No questions, no hassle in your mind. That's what you're thinking. No hassle, you know, and without knowing it, you're part of the Matrix, part of the big cult, if you like, just milling along, you know, like the scene in the Matrix where, you know, all these people are walking down the street. You're part of that crowd and you're not really questioning things much. And people might actually argue this is where the classic red pill, blue pill comes up, isn't it? It's like, which one do you take? People might argue that the red one is more difficult. I've come to discover that you get your challenges from whatever decisions that you take, but I would much rather, in whatever capacity I think is right, to live by truth. And that's the decision that I've taken.
Oh, totally. I mean, we can come on to the truth thing in a minute, because I think that is really important. But I wanted to pick you up on a point you made near the beginning, which I is interesting. I think I probably agree with it, that the people who are seeing through this, who have awoken from the spell, are often people who've been through and probably emerged from some kind of emotional hardship, some sort of terrible crisis, which has forced them to look into themselves and possibly become stronger and more independent of thought at the end of it. I mean, certainly in my case, I spent, we had a dodgy financial advisor who cost us all our money, basically. I mean, we lost pretty much everything. And for years afterwards, I was just haunted by demons and by self-hatred, you know, because you always blame yourself rather than the evil bastard that did it to you. And I think these experiences are ultimately quite valuable because they make you more humble. I don't think I was an absolute cocky ass, you know. I don't think I was loathsome, but I was definitely more complacent before the shit hit the fan. And so when this craziness started, maybe I was in a better position. But my question to you, Cole, would be, how do we know this? I mean, like maybe it's just the case that everyone has had emotional trauma, and that it just happens the ones we hang out with are the ones who are red-pilled. I mean, maybe there are lots of, you know, people still living in the Narrodyne who are equally messed up, but they haven't had that road to enlightenment.
Odds would suggest exactly that, right, James? Odds suggest that everybody has or will go through something classed as significant. And your example there doesn't surprise me. And again, you know, again, we could have a conversation about fate and whether that's real or free choice and these type of things. But you could say, well, if you didn't have that experience, would you be sitting here now type stuff? And odds would suggest that everybody's going to go through at least something. The difference is, in my opinion, James, is whether you're listening, is whether you're paying attention, and whether you even want to. Again, we just come back to the blue and red pill. At that time, when you went through that challenge, and finance is an interesting one because money is one of these tools that is put in the matrix as one of the highest forms of control. And generally, when we don't have as many money worries and we can go jet setting and we can go buy this and do that, we tend not to be so bothered about things, just generally. That's just common sense. But if you're paying attention, if you're going for a challenge, if you really want these challenges to make a difference in your life, they'll do exactly that because that's what you'll use them to do. The other alternative that you've got is to just ignore it and just plod along. You have got another option, and that's to allow it to capitulate your life.
Or to top yourself, that's the ultimate one, isn't it? That's it.
Yeah, you can capitulate. You can go for a challenge like you went through, and for a lot of people, it'll finish them. You know, it'll finish them because it's like dependent on what meaning you put into that. Like, you know, all of my money, all of it. And the matrix, the way it will do it is it will say, that's where I get my meaning. You know, where's my money gone? That's where my life is. That's the meaning. That's where my meaning is. Where's it gone? And then if you think that you've dropped the meaning, you've got no purpose. That's it. It's game over.
Yeah.
And that's why I try and frame things where I can, James. It's like a game. I try and view this entire thing, this matrix, if you like, as a game. Because when I do that, I reverse engineer it. Because what I do is I say, what do I want this game to look like? And if it is a game, how do I win it? And if I'm winning, what does that look like? And if I'm losing, what does that look like too? But let's concentrate on the winning. If this is a game and I'm winning this game, what does it look like to win it? And for me, what this game looks like in regards to winning and how I'd like to see it is, you know, I think that working backwards, I think this is why, you know, I wrote Surrounded by Morons. It's because I get frustrated, James. I get frustrated. I don't write books titled stuff like Arseholes and Morons because I'm a horrible person. I do it because I'm frustrated. I do it because I think that there can be more. There should be more. You know, I calculated using the 8 out of 10 principle, about 8 out of 10 people, the Pareto principle. I don't know if you've heard that.
Yeah. James.
It's about cause, and just using that statistic over the last couple of years, I looked at it and I was like, it's about right. The Pareto principle, if you use that for people, about 8 out of 10 people have just gone into this narrative, gone into this cult with very, very little question. And they're just living their lives based on that. And I get frustrated because I think it could be so much better. I think we deserve, I'm going to actually rephrase that. Do we deserve more? We could have more. We could have more. And however angry I get and frustrated and pissed off I get with people, and I do often, like sometimes I'm just like, you know, when the fifth time I went into the shop during the madness, as I call it, fifth, and the shop assistant comes running at me. Have you got your mask? Where's your mask? You know, these people that wouldn't normally say boo to a goose, right? Come literally running at you in these big masks. You just kind of see their eyes above it. Have you got your mask? About the fifth time of that happened, and I'm like, just go F yourself. Just go F yourself. You absolute effing moron. And I'm getting angry, and I'm like, do you know what? I get so frustrated, and I get frustrated because I just think this could be so much more. We are capable of so much more. And the reason why we are not more is because of a very tiny percentage controlling the narrative, controlling the matrix, controlling the system. However profound you want that to go, that is totally up to you. But there's a small percentage of whatever it is, people, entity, whatever, that's controlling this game. That literally has it like an illusion, like a spell, like cult-like. Mm. And it could be so much better if just a little bit more critical thinking took place, a little bit more common sense took place. And then when I see things like the indoctrination camps that we go into, and then we become dependent on the medical industry pretty much as soon as we adapt or try to adapt to any sort of environment, whether it be personal or working or
whatever.
Well,
the NHS, the NHS. I mean, you think about what, even before this, we got to this craziness, I was gobsmacked by the way, by the degree to which this Stalinist healthcare system, a crumbling, failing system, created in the aftermath of the war for a completely different circumstances to the one we live in now, and the one that more and more money was pumped into, that we were constantly being told that this was our national treasure, that this was, you know, it was effectively our sort of national religion, and everyone played along with this thing. And what does it do? Yeah. What it does is create in the public's mind that this institution is the key to their well-being and happiness. And without it functioning properly, they're doomed because they might get cancer. I mean, the way cancer has been pushed is everyone's number one fear, I think, well, it certainly was in the world before 2020. Everyone's darkest fear was cancer. And everyone knew somebody had got cancer and they worried about catching cancer. How do I go about avoiding cancer? That seems to me a pretty good example of what you're talking about. This constant medically induced fear state.
And do you blame them? I mean, the golden cow, the NHS, that you can't criticize, like these other things that, you know, you want to know what's part of the agenda, just have a look at what you can't criticize, right? And the NHS is way up there. You go on Twitter outside of an echo chamber and start criticizing the NHS and see how far you get, right?
Yeah.
Many different words. I've heard it referred to as a death cult. I wouldn't disagree that
either. From me.
Right? Well, you know, cancer, for example, we've all known people got cancer, died of cancer. Towards the end of their lives, you know, the thing that gets them generally is the medication that's given to them. You know, that's generally what ends their life.
Totally.
So that's where
chemotherapy is the kill shot.
So you know, well, the reason, you know, people call these things death cults, I get that, but I, you know, and this is where getting frustrated with people comes in as well. Actually, James, it's that like kind of full cycle thing. It's because I understand why you would prop up something like the NHS, because it's like the overall message that we've been getting these last few years. Stay safe. Mm. Stay safe. And for people, the NHS is the epitome of that. If anything happens to me, that's my safety net. And look, let's get a bit of balance here. If something happened, you had an accident and you're in pain, then there's a health system there, and you would hope, you know, you don't want to be suffering. You don't want to be in pain. You know, hey, look, shoot me up, huh? Shoot me up, you know, bang it in. You don't want to be in pain. You know, so look, there's many positive elements, but the issue is, and the NHS is just a representation along with other big things going on at the minute as to why the bigger system doesn't work and probably will never work. It's because you can't blame everybody in such a big organization, but organically, naturally, because of its size, because of the people involved, it's corrupt. It organically gets corrupt because statistically, again, CEOs, there's a lot of CEOs that are psychopaths. Statistically.
Yeah, probably all of them.
It's like one in, it's a high stat. I can't remember exactly what the stat is. I'll have a look.
80%.
Statistically, it's a high stat. It's high. Oh. Yeah, do you know what, James? Let's just go with it. Let's go with it. Hey, the media makes shit up. Let us do it as well. Yeah. Every CEO is a psychopath. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Right? Statistically, a lot of politicians are sociopaths and psychopaths. And it makes sense. Why? Because what might affect you and me in an everyday scenario of like just anxiety and stress, just getting way too much to even want to contemplate doing that type of job, where your entire job is just to firefight and deal with bollocks all day and deal with this and deal with that. So we wouldn't have the capacity to do it because we probably wouldn't want to do it. It's crippling. It's horrible. So a lot of these people go into these positions because they don't feel things like we do. They don't experience emotions like we do. So they go into these positions. So what you get as part of these, let's just call it corporations, the NHS, corporations, all businesses, countries, no such thing. Forget China, Russia, UK, US, forget about all that. All corporations, just think of them all like businesses. All with their different cultures, different people running the show, but a very small amount of people running it all. And NHS, corporation. So what you get is you get these people naturally filtering to the top, if you like, CEO positions, making all the key decisions. And then if they don't think and feel like you, if they don't have the same emotions as you, if you then become a figure on a board, and it's just about achieving that figure, and all the emotion goes out of it, all the humanness, soul, the soul goes out of it. That's what you get. And that's why we've got the NHS. That's why we've got countries being run the way that they are. That's why we have the greed and the corruption. And that's why it will continue to stay like it is, and it will never be fixed. Why? Because these people filter to the top, and they're the people making the decisions.
So just tell me about, you sort of mentioned that your anxiety attacks were so bad that you couldn't leave the house. So what's it like? Tell me a bit more about anxiety as opposed to, say, depression. What are the features?
Do you know, developing a more profound understanding of it, having worked with it, experienced it firsthand and worked with so many people now, the way I would define anxiety is it's a tune in to an openness to the elements is the way that I describe it. It's being in tune with things, and where the average person can sort of walk about and you know, pretty much, you know, get on with stuff, and they'll face that problem and deal with that, and it'll be like, yeah. There's always an element of naivety in all that. And that's, again, where the red and blue pill comes in. You know, you want to take the blue pill, eat the steak, stay naive, happy days. For people who are dealing with anxiety or anything around it, they're open. they're open to the elements, they're open to the sensitivity of a situation, they're open emotionally. And for people dealing with high anxiety, excessive anxiety, you could argue that they're too open. The box is too open, and they're letting it all in. And it's coming from different directions. And then even the smallest detail, if you're then training yourself to not have filters, not have walls to guard yourself, then the rug being up, you know, is enough to just, you know, fry some people, because, you know, that's how they're training themselves. It's like they're not defending themselves. They're not putting guards in place because they're opening themselves up to it all. And then it's the smallest details that just get you like that. And if you look at the last couple of years, James, you know, being as aware of things like high anxiety, this is why I really can't stand the media, and why I've got a particular pet hate for things like the media. It's because you can see through their messaging and their headlines and what it is that they put out. This is the constant cycle and state of fear that they want people in. Even people who were just moseying along, quite happy, happily, you know, Matrix, got the job, had a few stresses, but then, you know, watch their reality TV, order the takeaways, just generally kind of getting on with stuff. I'm not saying that that's the right thing either, because it's not. But generally people getting on with stuff, the media, what it's done is it's just come along and bitch slapped everybody. Come on, this is what you're paying attention to now, mofos. Yeah. Right. And then it's just been a constant state, fear cycle, anxiety, And it's really affecting people, you know, psychosis and you know, particularly kids. You know, that's the sad one for me, is the kids and the teens and the younger generations coming through now. It's crazy. Do you know what else I hate, James? With an absolute passion connected to all this, TikTok.
Yes.
That's nothing short of evil, right? TikTok, nothing short of evil, James.
You're right. It makes the stuff.
Have you got any routines on yours?
Well, you see, it's interesting that the stuff that you and I consume, because we're not really the TikTok generation, is we're just sort of consuming, I don't know, maybe weed or cocaine, and what the kids are taking is crack and crystal meth. I mean, TikTok is so much more addictive, so much more deleterious to one's health. I'm with you. And I think there has been this sort of analogy I'd use is the direction of that popular music has taken. That you know, we look back at the hippie music of the late 60s and 70s as a kind of golden era. And you look at the stuff that the kids are consuming now, it is pure Satanism. It is pure. It's the purest thing. It doesn't even pretend that it's trying to entertain anyone.
You're right.
It's absolutely 100% upfront about it. And they're really going for the kids.
You know what? Yeah, you're 100% right, James. You know what? Literally, because again, naturally with what I do now, you know, we're looking at content. The missus is, you know, looking online and finding content and stuff like that. And literally just today, she just turned her phone to me and said, "Look at this, Carl." And it's one of the latest video music films from Sam Smith.
Oh, don't get his pronouns wrong. There.
Right.
They.
Right. Exactly. You know. No agendas. But anyway, it's and she's showing me this video, and I'm just finding myself now, James. I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, then they're not even pretending anymore. You know, they're not pretending. And why are they not pretending anymore? And it's like they're coming out of the holes. You know, just yesterday, you know, I woke up Sunday and I did the video on it yesterday. But I woke up on Sunday morning, you know, perusing the news. And it was that comedian who stripped off the trans comedian stripped off and played the piano with well, the headline is played the piano with her penis. Right. I often, and you don't expect to see that on a Sunday morning, James. I mean, you know, I'm getting used to Clown Planet type stuff, but there's certain things, you know, where you just like, and I'm finding myself, you know, I think you use a really good example because they always use things like movies, music. These are key manipulation type tools that they use, particularly for younger generations. And the music industry, movies are bad, but the music industry, the social media connected to it, the TikToks, this sort of stuff airing on live TV, they're not hiding anymore. And that in itself is concerning because if you're not hiding and you're willing to expose, then it's through exposure that something grows and gets bigger. And not just the guys Plonker playing the piano, by the way. It's something that grows. You know, there's a reason why companies spend so much money on product placement. Don't even need to mention the product, James, right? Stick this can of soda in front of you. Stick this water bottle in front of you. Have this Apple laptop in the film. Don't even need to mention it. It's its presence that is the power that hits both the consciousness and the subconscious. And when they're hitting both sides through exposure, that's where it starts to become a grander reality. And I often find myself asking the question, James, you know, what the F is going on? What the F is going on?
That guy, I was astonished by that. You call him a comedian. This is a person nobody has ever heard of before.
They call him a comedian.
And yet suddenly he's on our screens and he's being heavily, very heavily promoted by the Mail online, particularly, I've noticed. Now, I'm old enough to remember when the Mail was a kind of prided itself on being a family newspaper. Okay, it was quite prurient occasionally. Well, it was very prurient. It loved sleaze while pretending to be disgusted by it. But this was in a different realm. By the way, you know who the first alleged comedian to come to prominence with playing the piano with his penis? And I know you know because you're wearing his favourite colour. You're in Zelensky green. But this.
What other colour is there at the minute, eh, James? What other colour is there, huh? Apart from the yellow and blue that we could slip in somewhere as well. NHS colours too as well, eh?
I think I was going to ask you what your... Because, I mean, there's going to be lots of people watching this podcast who are suffering anxiety. And I'm guessing that the first message you have to people is... Switch off, stop reading the newspapers, and stop consuming the media, and stop consuming TV entertainment.
I've become more of a realist as I get older. I get a wee bit more cynical, and along with my cynicism comes a bit of realism too. And as part of that, what I try and do, I don't do any coaching anymore for anxiety and stress. And I think there's different ways to tackle things. I find my outlay, if you like, my outlet to be comedy, to be able to balance out the seriousness with the humor and the ability to laugh. So when it comes to advice, if you like, or any direction when it comes to dealing with stress and anxiety, the realism side of it is you're not going to get away from the situation. You're not going to get away from the media. You're not going to get away from the overriding message, even if you're switching off the TV. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. As a common sense, immediate solution, of course you can switch the TV off. You can turn your phone off. You can have a break. But generally, the grander bit of advice is somehow the narrative always permeates because it will be someone talking about it. Mm-hmm. Or it'll be somebody at work, or it'll be in your environment, or it'll be something, even if it hits you subconsciously. So in regards to dealing with that, the first step to dealing with anything, if you so wish, is awareness. you can't deal with anything unless there's the first step of awareness. You're not going to deal with a problem unless you're first aware of it. And for me, again, there's a bit of careful balance here because, again, you can slip and paranoia and negative stuff can come out of it. So the balance here in relation to awareness is just preparedness, is being prepared to, hang on a minute, what are they trying to do here? What where's the why? Why are they doing this? Why do they want me in this frame of mind? It's become clearer. I don't know about you, James, but I'm getting a bit paranoid about the fact that they want people fat and stupid. You know, don't ask me where I get that crazy thought from, but it's like they just want people fat and stupid. Therefore, if you've got anger, if you've got anxiety, if you've got stress, if you've got any what you might define as negative emotions, use it. And what do you use it for? Get feckin' healthy. They don't want you healthy. They want you fat and stupid. So get healthy. Work on your mental health. Work on your physical health. They go together. Don't pretend that they don't go together. Don't go to the gym 5 times a week and then consume the media 5 hours a day. Don't work. Don't consume the media 5 hours a day and go to the gym thinking that's going to solve things. It's intrinsic. And it's about getting the balance. You don't need to be super fit. Go to the gym every day. That's not what it's about. It could just be just a bloody walk in the park, getting out. I was going to say fresh air, but the lines in the sky might prevent a bit of that too. But, you know, just go out.
Do you know what, Carl?
Go and get some fresh air. Huh?
Funnily enough, that was my insight when I was going through my dark years. And you must have found this, that you try... You know, even if you're not going to commit suicide, which I was never interested in, but you sort of commit mini suicide by adopting all these destructive habits because you want to punish yourself. You want to sort of reinforce your misery. And at some point I thought, well, hang on a second. Presumably you're going to get out of this stage. And when you get out of this stage, you're not going to thank yourself if you're riddled with alcoholism, your lungs have been shot to shit because you've been smoking, and, you know, how's that going to help? So you've got to look after yourself, especially through your dark times, so that when the good times come, you're in it. You've got a nice shell to be living in rather than a kind of a wrecked one.
Well, let's go on that point, actually, James. You got to is the language that you use in there. Unfortunately, we've got the drive. We've got drivers in life, and typically, what those drivers are governed by fear. What is our greatest fear? Whatever your greatest fear is generally the thing driving you. So, if your greatest fear is not dying, then you will do things not to die, and intrinsically, that. Goes with pretty much every other fear, because survival is the number one aim for it's built in us. But then if a fear is not being able to pay the bills, then that's why we go to work. We're driven by that fear. But for so many of us, when we're beaten up by the media, by our environment, by just thinking we adopt this nihilistic approach because, hey, fuck it, the big bomb's coming soon. And that's, again, where they want you mentally. They want you in that state. They want you fat and stupid. They want you not looking forward to tomorrow. They want you worried about the big bomb. They want you worried about the next pandemic. They want you worried about all of this stuff. But you use the word, you use the language got to. The one I prefer is have to. When you have to do something, that's the game changer. And for a lot of us, we feel that we've got to do things, and yet we don't. I've got to stop drinking as much. I've got to stop smoking. I've got to stop catastrophizing. Great. When did that ever change anything? Didn't change shit. You know, I've got to do a lot of shit. Don't change anything. When you have to do it, that's the game changer. And sometimes what we have to do is we have to manufacture a situation to make sure that we go from a got to a have to. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? We are driven by fear. And if it's the fear that we let, say, the media drive us with, then that's going to take us down a route of this nihilistic approach of sod it type stuff. Mm-hmm. That, in regards to the overall game, is that the game you want to play? Winning the game to you, what does that mean? Winning the game, is that just thinking, hey, yeah, live for every moment and screw tomorrow because the bomb's coming anyway? Is that really winning the game? Because what if the bomb don't come tomorrow? What if you've spent a year's worth of drinking alcohol and then you're a year in, you're finding yourself getting more and more down into a hole, more addicted to whatever it may be, alcohol, drugs, whatever vice it may be. Is that the game? You're winning the game like that? No. How does winning the game look to you? That is the thing to reverse engineer. What does the winning of the game look like? And then how are you going to make it a have to? How are you going to take it from I've got to do that to I have to do that? I have to do it. For me, the personal examples I can give to you, one of the ones I smoked for 15 years, and I got to a point, I just went cold turkey in the end. Probably one of the hardest things that I've ever done, quitting. But what was it that turned me from the I've got to stop smoking to I have to stop smoking? I built in all of these things in regards to what winning the game means. What winning the game to me is my near 10-year-old daughter. That future for her. Me being there for a start. And me being part of her journey. And if I continue smoking 30, 40 a day, which is what I was doing towards the end, is that gonna actually happen? Probably not. So rather than I've got to quit, that was a have to for me. I used to ride a motorbike, enjoyed doing that. You've got to have some vices. But then again, like I said to you, I had my daughter and I was like, I had a few near misses. So it was a have to for me to maybe not do that anymore. Right. I'm just giving basic examples here. But what does that mean to you in regards to where you are in your life right now? How you might be getting snared in the fear that they want you trapped in? Because they're doing that, by the way. They want, don't ever get fucking, I'm going to swear that. Don't ever get fucking mistaken. They want you fat and stupid. They don't care about you.
They don't care about you.
They want you fat and stupid. They don't care. They much prefer you being miserable. They want you living in your pod and they want you not looking forward to tomorrow and being worried about the bomb coming or the next pandemic. Don't ever get confused about that.
Yeah.
And when we start to get more awareness about that and the fact that, hang on a minute, maybe they don't care as much about me as I probably thought they did. You know, the perfect state, the government that cares about everybody. No. It's about you. It's about your kids, if you've got kids. It's about the people that you care about. It's about the people that you love. And it's about the game that you want to transpire. What do you want it to look like? And what does it mean to be winning it?
Come, I could happily talk to you for at least another couple of hours, but I keep ending my podcast like this. I'm dying for a piss because I've upped my water rate. I'm now drinking like twice the amount of water that I did in a day, and I just can't hold it in.
That's the rocking, isn't it? It's like, oh, it's coming out. It is.
We'll talk some more, but another time. But tell us where we can find your stuff, your books, your everything.
Well, I might drag this out because I think it would be hilarious if you actually pissed yourself.
I'm gonna have to do it. Do you know what? I was thinking of doing it. I was wondering if I did it in the cup, and I was wondering about, you know, would people be able to recognise from my expression whether I was urinating or not? And would I be able to, it's like, you know, like, could you have a wank on a screen and people not see you turning Japanese?
I'm sure the MPs do it often. You probably have to ask them for advice on degenerate shit like that. But wrap it up real quick. CarlVernon.com is where you're going to find all the bits on everything, and you'll find it all on there.
Well, Carl, it's been great talking to you. And if you've enjoyed this, please remember you can support me on Locals, on Patreon, on Subscribestar, and on Substack. And thank you very much for watching. And thank you again, Carl. Great talking to you.
Pleasure. Cheers, James.